the pile of evidences against him were very, very solid. But despite all of these facts, Italy wanted to release him for a political interest at the end of the day.
Follow the money.
This is the podcast of the European Investigative Newsroom, Follow the Money. I'm your host, Emma Duchassigné, and as always, I'm joined by Follow the Money reporter and my co-host, Alexander Fanta in Vienna. Hi, Alex.
Good morning.
In this episode, we're diving into how Italy released an alleged Libyan war criminal accused of murder, torture, and sexual offenses. The International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Osama Habis Najim al-Masri. But a Follow the Money investigation suggests that Italy's migration policy interest in Libya may have outweighed justice. Despite this, Brussels has remained largely silent.
So Alex, today we're going to be talking about Libya, a country with a very complex political situation. And our guest will tell us all about it in more detail. But what's good to know about Libya before we dive into today's topic?
You know, Libya is one of the most resource-richest countries in Africa. It has massive oil reserves, but it's been shaken by internal strife and turmoil for over 1.5 decades, ever since dictator Muammar al-Gaddafi was toppled in 2011. And ever since, the country has basically been split between various rivaling governments and militias. It's never quite been to rest. And in that kind of turbulent dynamic situation, other crises layered onto that, including migrants trying to desperately get to Europe through Libya, attempting to use boats. And I think that's what we're here to talk about today.
And our guest will tell us all about it. Today, we're joined by reporter Lorenzo Bagnoli, who's based in Milan. And together with his colleague Paolo Riva, Lorenzo is going to tell us all about how these ties played out behind the scenes. And welcome, Lorenzo.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Today, we're going to be talking a lot about a person called al-Masri, Osama Habis Najim al-Masri, to be concrete. And what should we know about this person?
Al-Masri is basically a top official in Libya. He is attached to the detention center in Tripoli. And recently he has been involved in an ICC case because ICC wanted him to be prosecuted for some crimes against humanity he committed in Libya. There was an arrest warrant for him and Italy arrested him because he was in the Italian territory. But what happened at the end of the day was that Italy, a couple of days later, sent him back with a state flight to Libya, where he was welcomed by a cheering crowd as a sort of hero of the nation. Our story on Follow the Money reveals how the pile of evidences against him were very, very solid. But despite all of these facts, Italy wanted to release him for a political interest at the end of the day. But the irony is that on the 5th of November, the Libyan prosecutor arrested him for basically the same crime he was accused of by the ICC.
I'd love to understand a bit better the power dynamics within Libya. What are these different militias on about? Who's who?
I mean, these militias can change even their ideology quite quickly. The big threat from the Tripoli perspective is always the presence of the Eastern government.
So that's perhaps interesting to understand. There's basically two parts of Libya. There's the Tripolitana with Tripoli, the capital, and then there's the Cyrenaica with Benghazi as the capital. And these two parts of the countries have historically been kind of antagonistic and are now controlled by different factions. And then what we are seeing now, what we're talking today, is essentially internal strife within one part of the country, within the Tripoli-based militias, but there are still other players in the country. So it's a very dynamic situation.
Yeah, exactly. And the Benghazi government, which is guided by Khalifa Haftar, a former general of the army who served under Gaddafi before 2011, And he's always looking for allies into the different militias who are operating in the West. So it's pretty clear that there are different and rival militias.
Within this very fragmented and complex political landscape, what sort of al-Masri's role? Is he seen as a very powerful person? What's really his role in this whole landscape?
His war criminal, al-Masri, was in charge of a judicial police. So he was an important piece of the Libyan puzzle to handle both internal security and migration as well, because even the migrants ended up in this prison. In 2011, he was a simple merchant on the street of Martyr Square in Tripoli. Militia chose him as a head of the justice police, who was in charge of running the detention centers all over Tripoli.
So, and in the context of him running these prisons or detention centers, he allegedly committed several war crimes, or at least the ICC has accused him of committing several war crimes. And what kind of crimes are we talking about here?
We are talking about tortures. And it's not only the ICC, it's also the Libyan Judiciary Authority, which accused him of the same kind of crimes. In the Libyan case, there wasn't only tortures, but also a killing of a prisoner. And the reason for this torture could be various. There are cases, for example, of homosexuals that have been tortured because of their homosexuality. There are migrants who pass from this prison who have been beaten simply because maybe they didn't follow an order. But what is very clear is that al-Masri is a violent figure. I mean, he was known for this fact that the ICC has been able to prove at the end of the day. But in any case, he hasn't been sentenced by anyone.
So basically, we're talking about a Libyan warlord, heavily suspected of, you know, human rights violations on a grand scale, also personally beating up people, and who's been sought by the International Criminal Court. So that's something that is, you know, stands out really starkly as a case of where the international criminal justice system could really make a difference.
Exactly. And based on that international justice system, there was, in fact, an arrest warrant by the International Criminal Court. And that also led to his arrest in Italy, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Italy initially arrested him. It was the 19th of January, 2025. And then there was the whole Italian drama happening. According to the Minister of Justice, the case sent to Italy by the ICC wasn't compliant with the international regulation for this kind of procedure. And that's why he basically stopped the arrest and didn't convalidate the arrest. So for the Italian Ministry of Justice, the arrest of al-Masri was illegal. 2 days later, he was sent back to Libya in a state flight. And officially, what has been responded by the Interior Minister of Italy, Matteo Piantedosi, when he was asked to explain what happened to the parliament, he said that he was expelled for national security reason. So al-Masri was considered a dangerous figure, and that's why he was sent back to Libya.
So Lorenzo, al-Masri was so dangerous to Italy that they let him go. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what the minister says.
So at some point we have Italy expelling him with reasons where you thought, I think there's more behind that. And I think that's also what your story really exposed. So what did your story reveal about other dynamics perhaps at play behind Italy, in fact, sending him back to Libya?
The main reason is they didn't want to meddle with the Libyan politics because they have good partners in Libya and Italy wants them to handle the al-Masri situation. And And the other reason is this constant attempt to legitimize the Libyan authorities and say that they are a stable country with a government that is really representing the whole country. So since 2017, Italy is trying to promote the stabilization of Libya through the stabilization of its border. Probably a guy like Al-Masri is one of the mechanisms who could be used by the Libyan authorities to achieve this goal. And that's why Italy didn't want to meddle with the internal affair of Libya.
So what you're essentially saying is that Italy puts its migration policy above, you know, the requirements of international law to prosecute war crimes.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And the pile of evidences against him were very, very solid. But despite all of these facts, Italy wanted to release him for a political interest at the end of the day.
And it's not just Italy that has a specific interest in Libya when it comes to migration. It's, of course, the wider EU. And how has Brussels responded to this whole case and to Italy dropping it?
Brussels was embarrassed by the fact that Italy wasn't compliant with the ICC rules. But apart from that, there wasn't any big reaction. And that was striking even from our side.
And when we're talking about the EU as a whole, the EU, of course, also has its own deals with Libya, right, when it comes to migration?
Yeah, and the same model has been used in different countries. This agreement is the so-called externalization of the borders, which means basically asking someone else to stop migrants before they come to Europe. It's what happened with Libya. It's what happened with Tunisia as well. It could happen the same thing with Egypt.
The idea that European countries could pay off basically Libyan warlords and authoritarian figures in Northern Africa to stop the flow of migrants, that's been around for decades now and has become increasingly an accepted paradigm over the last decade.
Alex, when you hear all this, because I think it's quite clear what the EU's interest is in making those deals with North African countries. But when you hear all this, also this specific case about Al-Masri, don't you also think that making these migration deals with third countries also very much puts the EU at the mercy of the wishes of those countries?
Yes, yes. I think this, the Libyan case, can really only be understood in the prism of there was a dirty deal that was made over migration, and that now puts the EU countries in a bind, and they will forsake international obligations such as executing an international arrest warrant just to get that migrant deal, keep it in place, and that's really problematic.
And sort of this question of, does international law still have the authority that it once had? That's, of course, something we have seen beyond just this Libyan case. Lorenzo, what do you think this case tells us about the ICC's authority?
As we said, migration is the priority for the Italian government, and it has been the priority for a while. The fact that there are even other right-wing governments that are following the same pattern enable Italy to be even stronger in pushing for this agenda. The fact that Trump in the US is doing the same thing is another factor that helps Italy in ignoring the ICC request. I think that in this context, we will see more cases like the Al-Masri's one, where an international authority delivering a warrant will be ignored.
But we don't just have to look to you know, Italy and Al-Masri. We're seeing this in other places in Europe as well. We were talking about Putin coming to Budapest and not facing arrest. We're talking about Netanyahu being able to visit European countries, not facing arrest, and you know, with this, I would say, minor breakdown of the brittle international order and the US kind of going rogue on us, there's a real question whether other countries will follow and whether there will be a general decline in compliance with these with the International Criminal Court.
And even just beyond ignoring orders of international law, of the International Criminal Court, I think what we've seen also is that governments are in fact blaming the international law system as an obstacle in executing their migration objectives, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that even the role played by international agencies from the UN has changed quite a lot. They were the one, for example, raising concern when there were migrants' rights abused. Now, European countries are trying to not fund these agencies or using them as one of the tools to handle migrants, but again, with their own agenda. For example, IOM has been used a lot in Libya to make voluntary returns of migrants from Libya to their country of origins. Initially, it was used as a humanitarian tool to help migrants who were desperate in Libya to change their situation. But now the request from the Libyan authorities is to use it as a tool to keep a lower number of migrants in Libya. And this kind of policy is followed by European countries in order to keep the number of migrants lower than before.
Getting international law out of the way, essentially.
Yeah.
Then to go back to the Al-Masri case, so where do we stand now and what do you expect that's going to happen moving forward?
I would be very curious about the outcome of the Libyan case because it could be pretty important to understand the real reason behind this expulsion from Italy. Maybe there could be more details that emerge from there. In Italy, we still have a case open for a top official of the Ministry of Justice who could face a trial because of her behavior in handling this case. So I expect that the political quarrels will be around for a while, but after the political quarrels, there won't be any big change into the Italian attitude and policies towards Libya and in terms of consequences for the people involved in the Al-Masri's case. The other very volatile situation is the one on the ground in Libya. That means that the people who is running the country today could not be there tomorrow.
So you're saying that the people who have now arrested Al-Masri might in fact not be there anymore tomorrow. Tomorrow, there might be people in power who do not want to see Al-Masri arrested and he might be free again.
Exactly. That's what happened in the past, and this could happen any time with any Libyan leader.
On that note, we'll wrap up today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us, Lorenzo.
Thank you.
And Alex and I will be back soon for another episode.
You've listened to the podcast of Follow the Money. Our watchdog journalism is funded by our members. Subscribe and support European investigative journalism.